This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
To talk about the Cavs, Pacers, the Game 2 debacle, and so much more, we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. As he says on his X profile, professionally inessential. NBA writer and reporter at the Bleacher Report, and also host of the Hardwood Knox podcast, Dan Favalli, joining us now. Dan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you guys so much for having me.
Well, I wish we could talk like, oh man, what a Cavs win last night, 48 points from Donovan, and they eked it out without three other best, but we're not doing that today. Just how do we put into context, or how do you put into context, the Cavs being down 0-2 at this point with a series shifting back to Indy on Friday?
I mean, I think the word is bleak, and it's not even necessarily just the deficit, but you're sitting here wondering about, okay, you have three key rotation players, two of which are just flat-out stars that are banged up, and one of which, Darius Garland, has not played in quite some time, and you have to worry about when are they coming back, what are they going to look like when they're coming back, and if you do have to play even shorthanded or with guys on limited minutes or not at even close to 100%, what does that look like for your team when it shifts the burden onto all these other players? And we've seen Donovan Mitchell through two games of this series. I think he's posted two of his three highest usage rates of the season. And when you have other guys who are either missing wide open threes, having a game like Ty Jerome did, it takes a toll. And I know that he hasn't had to play heavy minutes throughout the season, but this team put together a heck of a defensive performance for most of game two. They're picking up the Pacers full court. That is exhausting. And so for a team that has depth, it's been a luxury, but they're sort of at the point where you're wondering, okay, is it enough? We saw Kenny Atkinson kind of tighten up the rotation at points during this playoff series. And if you do that, are you just going to have enough to overcome this? Because now you are going back to Indiana, which is a very good basketball team. The one thing I'll say really quickly, though, is that the Pacers, and we saw it in game two, like, they can be wildly inconsistent. They played down to the level of their opponent probably as much as any team in the league this year other than the Heat or the Timberwolves. And so I think if you're a Cavs fan, you sort of cling to that inconsistent part of Indiana's DNA moving forward.
Yeah, staying with the Donovan side of things, though, I think that's really interesting. You know, because the whole season, Dan, was spent on the idea that Donovan was not going to play as many minutes and he was going to be, you know, letting other guys be the hero on any given night. He wasn't going to take a lot of shots. He was going to get his, but he wasn't going to take a lot of shots. And then this postseason, the last two games, he's had to put on the cape and try to be the superstar that we know him to be. What would the message be, or what would the game plan be for game three if you're Donovan? Is it just try to do what you did in game two and then hope someone like Ty Jerome has a better night? Or do you try to go back to maybe what he did during the regular season?
I think you have to be closer to a game two mindset. And we kind of saw it when you're looking at, you know, the Cavs on wide open threes against Indy in that game two. They were sub 30%. And so it's not that you don't trust those guys, but if you're going to have to rely on someone like an Isaac Okoro, who did a really good job for parts of the game defending Tyrese Haliburton, that's going to come with some offensive concessions, and that's going to fall on Donovan Mitchell to pick up the slack. You certainly hope for a better game from Ty Jerome, but like, you got a really good game for the most part in game two from Max Strus. Can you count on that? And so I think this is, you know, I don't think Donovan Mitchell needs to score close to 50 points for them to win every game moving forward, but that is I think that's the mentality that he has to go with. And, quite frankly, I was pretty impressed with, like, late in the game. Like, his first step was still pretty quick after all the stuff he was doing, not only on offense, defensively. And so you hope that he just has another couple of those performances in the tank to buy Cleveland as much time as possible.
Dan Favale joining us in the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, breaking down Cavs Pacers, Cavs, where they're at, all that. I didn't mean to rhyme there. Dan, looking to the rest of this series, is two out of the three players coming back game three enough, or do you need all three guys, all hands on deck, for the rest of the series to have a chance to go ahead and get back in this and even win this?
I would say that depending on who the one is, I could see them needing only one of those guys to make it out of this series. Pascal Siakam has not looked right, and so you expect him to play better. Tyrese Halliburton has, fantastic close to the game, but Cleveland was really able to disrupt his ability to get the ball for most of that game, and he's now dealing with a wrist injury. So I think ideally you get all of them back, two would be great. But if we're talking in terms of a Garland or a Mobley and it's one of those guys, I actually do believe that Cleveland is talented enough to erase that deficit, in part because I think getting either one of Mobley or Garland back, I'm not sure that a lot of us understand how collectively huge that will just be for the offense and how it allows Donovan Mitchell make things easier, allows him to settle into a role that he had played more throughout the regular season. And it should create even higher opportunities for other guys on the roster. And then also you're not as reliant in theory on maybe some guys who are offensive liabilities or they're just not playing as many minutes as they would be otherwise.
Dan, put in a proper context, because in the NBA this season, we had more 20-point leads erased than in any given season in NBA history. And maybe that's the three-point shot. Maybe that's just how the game's evolved. But it feels like a 20-point lead is now the new, 12-point lead. It's just not what it used to be. But then you have a game like last night, you have a 20-point lead at different times and different stretches for the Cavs, and people are zeroing in on that part of it. Is it as big of a deal, or has it been minimized because of the three-point shot?
It's definitely been minimized to some extent, but the last week and a half has definitely just been an extreme. And I think a lot of kind of what's happened too is it's not even just the three pointer, but when you're looking at, in the end of that Cleveland Indy game specifically as an example, Cleveland does a really good job keeping Indiana off the offensive glass for three quarters, five offensive rebounds. In the fourth quarter, Indiana has six offensive rebounds. And so teams being willing to crash the glass, or even just the ability to, in some of these other games we've seen, if you're forcing turnovers or you're running like the Knicks did against the Celtics off those long misses from three, I really think the three-pointer for sure, it's definitely made a 20-point lead less valuable than it was, but I just think teams are a little bit smarter and opportunistic in these specific situations, knowing when to run, knowing when to crash the glass and things like that.
Of all the teams in the second round of the playoffs that have yet to win a game, so Cleveland, Boston, OKC, and Minnesota, are the Cavs the most in trouble of those four teams?
I think they have to be, just because they are the only one in that 2-0 hole, and they're dealing with these injuries. And I think, when you look at Boston, New York specifically, I just can't bring myself to have concern about the Celtics. The Timberwolves are, they did fight back in game one, and now you're going to face a Warriors team that's a little bit deeper than they were midseason, but without Steph Curry for foreseeable future. So I think you have to look at the Cavs and say they are in the most danger by default.
Yeah, I mean, it's upsetting. I understand why you have to say that, though, or why you feel that way, because when you're down 2-0, you've obviously put yourself behind the eight ball. But in game three, we talked about the different players that could or couldn't come back, so I know it makes it incredibly hard to analyze. But in game three, does it feel like this is the type of series that if the Cavs get one win, then it can compound, and then you fast forward and you look up and it's game six and the Cavs are taking this?
Yeah, I could certainly see him playing it out that way. And just even kind of what we've seen through the first two games and game two being an encapsulation of it, this feels like a series that should be destined to almost go the difference at this point, and the distance. And I say that as somebody who had the Cavs in five at the start of it. I clearly underrated just the severity of Darius Garland's injury. And so when you look at the adjustments that I think we've seen from either team from both teams through the first two games, I expect this to be more of a chess match. I would expect Cleveland to win with or without Darius Garland and Evan Mobley and DeAndre Hunter. I would expect them to win just game three. And, if you get to that 2-1 point, you can talk yourself into anything. You can talk yourself into the Cavs winning three straight from there and ending it in six. So I do think that this series, that this isn't going to be a situation where they come in game three, they're flat and just exhausted, even though they might be. That is a game that I would expect them to take just based off how this team has responded all season.
So I think there's going to be, if the Cavs don't make it out of this series, there's going to be a frustration with maybe the lack of progress, right? Whether this one goes seven games or five games like the second round went last year with Boston, I think naturally Cavs fans are going to go, okay, year one with these guys, you were round one and done. Then last year, you top out in the second round. Then you top out again this year. Is that the right approach to have with this? Or should maybe the Cavs front office have a little bit more sense of urgency and maybe, I would say, shaking things up, but changing the dynamics with how the roster's built?
That is such a good question, and it's a question that makes me glad I'm not running this team, because I think from the outside, I look at it and say, you have to see like the value lost to injury in this series. If they end up losing it and these players come back, like, okay, maybe we can have a discussion. But if you have Darius Garland missing as much time as he did, Evan Mobley missing multiple games in this series, I think that has to be part of the equation. And the fact that you have all of these guys under contract for the foreseeable future, I do think it lends itself to patience. But to your point, like, we've now been through multiple years of this, and there's always going to be some type of a built-in excuse, because it does take luck to win an NBA title. And I think the concerns when you look at, oh, did people even think the Cavs could win with the two small guards in the backcourt, and how expensive your roster is going to get moving forward once the Evan Mobley extension kicks in? Those are all questions that you have to look inward and internally and decide, like, okay, what do we do here? Because I think next season is probably the last season where you can even expect this core to stay together the way that it exactly is before they get prohibitively expensive and they're maybe forced to make some tougher decisions in 2026 anyway. So I would argue in favor of patience from this team, but I get it when you're going through 3 years of this, and we know just NBA windows are so fleeting now. Even when it seems like teams are going to be there for the long run, they're not always there. And so you have to capitalize on your best window while it's still open. And the Cavs window is still open, but if you're not confident in either guy staying healthy, or maybe you still have questions about, you know, whether it's the dual bigs or whether it's the two small guards, I thought you answered a lot of those in the affirmative this regular season, but I think you would have to reevaluate and see how this series ends specifically, but it'd be tough for me to look past how much value you lost to injury right now.
In this series, what type of job do you feel like Kenny Atkinson has done?
The way that in Game 2 specifically that they made it so difficult for Tyrese Haliburton to get the ball for most of the game, I think that he's done a really good job overall. And I think I would keep coming back to just how much more inventive on most nights their offense looks compared to last season. So maybe it'll be time to relitigate some of his decisions and maybe who he went with in some of these more shorthanded situations, but I haven't had a huge issue with what he's done.
Dan, great stuff as always, man. You guys kill it on the Hardwood Knox podcast. We appreciate you, and I'm sure we'll have you on as the series goes on, and God willing, the Cavs actually do go a little deeper in the playoffs.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much there. Dan Favalli on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We have plenty to react to there about kind of don't love how bleak everybody's being. Now I'm going to start lecturing the national media on how bleak they should be about the Cavs being down 0-2. And finally, I mean it this time, the injury part of the equation in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. Talk about missed opportunity. They got everything. I mean, they got dill pickle vodka.
They do. Yeah. And you know what? A lot of them are quite enjoyable.
You know how many just random flavors of, whether it's vodka or just any, you know, liqueur that I have because I wanted to make a drink once?
Is it a lot?
It's way too much.
Yeah.
I have like two different things of orange liqueur. You don't need two different things. I have several different flavors of schnapps. The only thing, the last time
I... You can do straight up schnapps, though. That's always a decent time. Like root beer schnapps.
Ironically, I think that's the one schnapps I don't have.
Root beer schnapps?
Do not have it.
The most famous of the schnapps?
Do not have it. Huh. I have all the other schnappses. The family of schnappses lives well in the Wilson household, except root beer.
It's the best schnapps.
By the way, Germans were on one. We're like, we will start with the root beer.
That's how that went down.
That's exactly how they said it.
Just like that.
We'll get to the other ones later.
This is the drunk history of how that went down.
The schnapps, that is.
Yeah.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
I gotta say.
Yes?
I really just want a bacon cheeseburger. I'm sorry. That's where Fatty distracts
himself.
We're
getting close to dinner time. It's okay.
Is. I mean, this is my...
I'm finally having the Indian food tonight I didn't get to have on Cinco de Mayo. Because my mom was insistent we have Mexican food to be festive. We were going to have Indian food.
Yeah.
We didn't. Now we're having it tonight, and I'm thrilled. I love Indian food.
Really?
Are you a fan? You're not a fan?
I don't think I've ever had it. You know, you're kind of like my food Sherpa. You're the guy that introduced me to, what's that called?
Which I don't know. I don't know what you're going for. He's doing that thing where he asked me to be
everything.
In his brain again.
I lost everything.
Sushi.
I was so succinct.
Sushi.
Yes.
I got you into sushi.
Yes, and that's exactly what I was talking about.
There we
sushi.
Go.
Sushi.
8 years ago or so, seven years ago.
You were my sushi Sherpa.
We went into the sushi restaurant together because I've been telling Nick that he had to have sushi. And then it was a hybrid sushi hibachi place.
Yeah.
But we sat at the bar and we had sushi while hibachi was going in the background. And I could see it with your eyes. You wanted to be very much a part of the hibachi crew, and you're like, you got me sushi, but there's fire over there.
Also, I believe that was one where we might have tied it on a little too hard, and it was just after Browns game, so I'm already running late. I had to let Vanessa know I don't have a ride home, so I had to stay in downtown Cleveland, and we're lucky I'm still married. That did not go down well. I did not expect to have that many drinks, that much sushi. And it did not play. I did not even give her a heads up. Like, you're like, well, I'm going to be a little late. Me and my boy JP going to hit up the sushi spot. No, there was no heads up. There was a, I ain't coming home.
I mean, it was definitely it was a spur of the moment deal, though. It wasn't like we planned to get sushi afterwards. In fact, you surprised me because I've been telling you, because back, believe it or not, 7 or 8 years ago, having sushi was still like not everyone's had it type thing. And so I'm like, you have to have sushi.
I was like the last person
to
not have sushi, by the way.
Sushi. It'd be like today, somebody being like, you've never had a cheeseburger? Same type deal. And
I don't think those are even remotely same. One is American pub food, and the other is still, it's not fringe, but it's on the outer fringes of the cuisine experience.
I think they both tapped out the amount of people that could have it in society. Like, we're at 99.9% on both ends.
No, because you can get the extra 0.01% just by letting me have a second one every day and it not kill me. I could eat more burgers.
I could eat enough for everyone.
I think once every 6 months is good for me on sushi.
Yeah, it didn't seem like you loved it.
No, it was good.
We had fun.
But it wasn't like, I need to have this. Now, where were we going with this?
Well, I was going to tell you about Shedeur Sanders and the tweet that Boog had.
Oh, we got to get to this
because
now,
this was kind of wild.
Is Boog becoming our source on the show for all things Shedeur?
I mean, he just tweets it out publicly. I'd love to say that he's like our guy or something like that, but I've never had contact
with
him.
Nobody else has claimed him.
I guess if it's open, we'd love to have him.
Yeah.
Love to have him. I love his...
Maybe we could have him, and then like 3 hours later, he could like tweet something out incendiary that we missed the opportunity to ask him on.
That would be fun, too.
I'd be so mad if that happened to
that
us.
That would be... Yeah, we would not have a good time with that.
So bad for that show.
So he tweeted out the idea that... Listen, this is a hand stopwatch, I promise you. But he said he just clocked a 4.3340 in this workout. It's getting real. I can't wait. And it's like, well, hold on. So Shedeur ran a 4.3340?
Oh, I thought Boog was saying he ran the 4.3340.
Oh, you think he just clocked one?
Yeah.
So we care about Boog's 40 time?
I didn't know if that's what he was tweeting out, because it sure as hell isn't Shedeur Sanders.
I mean, Lamar Jackson ran a 4.3740. Jalen Milroe ran in the 4.3s as well. Is Shedeur secretly Lamar Jackson meets Jalen Milroe and no one's talked about it?
I think this begs the question. Is he trolling? Or does he legitimately think that we will believe this tweet just because he sent it out?
I just love the idea of starting the stopwatch a little bit later and being like, I got it, 4.33. It's great. We nailed it. It's like, no, the only thing you showcase there is that you have an ability to stop a stopwatch at 4.3 seconds later than when you started it.
I do like the idea that I could like start a 40-yard dash and you don't pick it up until I get to like yard 28.
Yeah.
And then you hit it and then I get to 40 yards barely.
And then yelling, stopwatch, don't lie.
Look at that.
Stopwatch, don't lie.
Look at that. But what we would do is we would take a shot of your hand turning a stopwatch on. Yeah. So it made it seem like, look, at, I mean, he started it, the guy ran, and 4.3 seconds later.
Also, we have video of Shador doing just about everything. You're going to throw 4.33 out there? I'd like to see video of that.
Oh, wow.
I want video
of that. Is this the Shatern we've all been waiting for?
Listen, if he can go 4.33, then we're unlocking something different with Shador. If he can run a 4.33, now the doubt that has creeped into my voice here tells you that I don't believe he actually ran a 4.33.
Doesn't sound like you have a lot of shafaith.
The projected times and what he'd been basically doing in any workout he's ever done has been in like the 4.6, 4.8 range. He's not a 4.3 guy.
So is he just playing on the fact? Is Boog just playing on the fact, tweeting out Shador just ran a 4.33? Is this just all like a callback to when he didn't run at the combine? Because you can't disprove that he didn't run this. Is that what this is?
I don't know what this is, but I'll tell you what. If this turns out to be like a, I'm sorry for going full Gruden there. But if this turns out to be like a Justin Fields situation where he just gets to the pros and just becomes an insane runner instead of anything else, that would be quite the turn.
I'll give it a little CJ Stroud too. Like CJ, I know the Georgia game, but CJ Stroud runs in games. You're like, I keep forgetting that he can do that because I saw it once at Ohio State.
Well, that's the thing. At Ohio State, Justin Fields basically did not run, and then he gets to the pros, and then 6 months into him being an NFL player, he declared himself one of the top five best running quarterbacks of all time, and no one was even like, he's off here, because he was just running so frequently.
It's just wild to me. And you're going to notice a through line, because this is not about Shador Sanders. This came up when we talked about Bill Belichick and his girlfriend, the toddler. This has come up in every time we've talked about people in the public eye in their need for like setting their own narrative. I just don't know why you care. I don't know why anyone in the Sanders camp should care. Just should care to put out, unless you're trolling. If you're trolling, if that's just what comes part and parcel with this, it's a big part of the Manziel camp thing of trolling people. Ha ha ha, Billy Manziel.
Manziel made up a whole story about him being rich that we all bought that he was not true at all.
So, like, if it's just a bit, okay, I'm a fairly mischievous person. I like a lot of dumb bits. I kind of get it. But, like, if you really felt like, hey, people are saying Shador's too slow, tell him he ran a 4.33, don't put a video out. Like, what are we, like, why? Why do you care? Like, even, honestly, this is the downside of the tweet yesterday where he clearly took umbrage and supposed that the Browns did Shador dirty with the number 12. Like, they might have.
Well, no, but
I couldn't put it past the Browns not to be like, we're going to show this kid who's boss. At the same point, why?
Here's also the
problem,
though.
You're fighting a battle that doesn't exist.
Here's also the problem. Maybe 2 hours later, he'll come back and be like, I was obviously talking about Travis Hunter. And then it'll be like, no, you're the Shador guy now. If you say he, it's going to have to mean Shador.
I just, you know what it strikes to me is you're laying the groundwork to make excuses for a kid who doesn't need excuses. Like, to me, it almost feels like, okay, people throw this around a lot in sports, and it's the dumbest thing ever. I railed on it already today. To me, it's the epitome of loser mentality. If you're trying to sway the narrative, guys, the only thing that's going to matter is what does he look like on the football field.
Yeah, and we'll know. It'll be obvious to us. We'll know whether or not he's putting a lot of work and gotten the job done.
And so if you're not confident in that dude, what are we doing? Like at some point, just be confident in yourself. Like, there's so much of the Shador camp thing, and I'm not trying to rail against your dude. I want him to succeed here. I really, really do. All right, I just want somebody to pull the sword from the stone and surprise us this year, make me wrong as hell that they're not a 3-14 team. I'd like it to be one of the young guys so we can have prolonged hope. I want to watch consistent winning football. At the same point, like, why are we coming off so insecure and so needy? Like, what? Like, live, just, you don't need to. If I was Shador Sanders, dude, I'm not Shador Sanders, and I don't care.
Yeah, there are people that just care and they like the updates, though. I don't know that it's insecure and needy. I think he's just trying.
It's what it comes off as.
I think what's happened here is he's gotten a little bit more following now that he's become basically Shador's guy. And I know he'll tell you, oh, I've been tweeting out here for a decade or whatever it's been. Okay, that's fine. I just became of your existence or just knew of your existence a week and a half ago, right? Well, yeah. And maybe he's catching on to that.
We got the tinfoil hats talking here.
All right, I like this.
Loba saying, my conspiracy about the Boog tweet. The Boog tweet. I'm never going to get over this.
That's the
simplest nickname in the damn world, and I cannot get it. My apologies to Boogs, all of them. And so his conspiracy is that he posted it because everyone saw Pickett running in the racing video. Yeah, that's a little... this is not a criticism. There's a lot of guys racing each other video content from the Browns today that, as a fan, does nothing for me.
All right, so now he's saying he wasn't talking about Shador, by the way. You talk about it, you get the instant reaction. He says he's not talking about Shador. When you're the Shador guy, we have to assume everything you're saying is Shador, is it not?
Clearly, he was talking about DeAndre Carter.
Yeah, right?
Because
what are we doing? Are we going to have this? All right, now we have to make a show stance here. I think we're out on Boog.
Nope. No.
Is it going to be this coy and this... the misdirection was obvious here, was it not?
Yeah, it was. But no, I'm not out on him. He's not a reliable source on Twitter, but who is? But no, I just don't care, buddy. Like, you're in a great camp. Like, it's okay. Real Savior P saying, why do you care? Why? Because it seems desperate. It seems insecure, and you shouldn't be. And by the way, this is I made it very clear at the beginning of this, if you're just joining us, I'm not specifically even talking about Shador. There's so many people, and I'll tell you, a fair amount of the organizations in this town are wildly obsessed with what is said about them that at no point has it ever been personal. Like, you actually listen to this station, people don't take personal shots. Okay, most people don't take personal shots.
you did call Bill Belichick's girlfriend a toddler like 2 minutes ago.
That's why I said most people don't take shots. But oh, well, that's not how this really went. No, it's not how you want to say it went. And like this obsession with churning out a narrative, and I'm sure it's all tied up with business and being obsessed about trying to make as much money as you can. It just makes you like, guys, if I was a billionaire, I promise you that none of what anyone would say on social media about, I know, because last night I sent a tweet and people said really awful things to me. And you know what I said? They must not be in a good spot. Or, it's right after a game. They're probably just emotional.
Yeah, and they were emotional because it was like, after a game and a lot of people weren't in a good spot.
I do not get in an era of this kind of accessibility with each other. Everyone in sports is trying to front. It is just, it blows my mind. If I was that good looking, if I was that rich, if I was that talented, if I had a harem of Insta chicks at my disposal, and I'm just talking about Belichick at this point, I don't have those things.
I know, but he's not. It's not
and
like,
I don't care.
It's not like Shador is the only one, you know?
No,
I mean,
that's a great point. But it's just everybody in sports.
It's a lot of athletes these days. It's what they feel like they need to do.
And it's just like...
But I get it. I get it. The videos you post, it gets fans excited. And then ultimately, you can make money off these type of things. You get advertisements. You get endorsements. Like, if you have a million followers on TikTok, that's very profitable in many ways. And that's just what they're going after.
Also, just reading here, it turns out I ran a 4:33 earlier today. We didn't get any video of it because it was I was actually saving a falling kitten from a burning building. But let it be known, I caught the cat. They're alive. Well, actually, it ran into the street and then got hit. But I saved it. I gave it an extra 3 seconds on the planet.
That was too much of a turn for me for that kitten. In my head, I was like, did you catch the kitten? And you're like, you answered it. I caught the kitten. And then I wanted to know the kitten was home safe. And then you just killed the kitten in the middle of the road.
But then it survived. Oh!
An M. Night Shyamalan twist. And now you're nursing it to health in your bosom.
Right here. It's right here.
It's how does it fit perfectly right there?
Keith will pull the video.
We're just going to go on my OnlyFans at Nick Wilson Does. In case we missed it, coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast.
Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide, or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball. The game's official home for games is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.